Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Future, future, and more future. All three of today's guests are involved in ventures that may generate TVs next year and decade. We're putting before you a smart TV interactive roof, starting with Hovercast Chief Executive Officer Eli Feldberg, who joins me next. And then we'll hop to Europe to hear our second guest, Jean-Francois Wang. He developed the Explorers, the first winner of Apple TV App of the Year 2 weeks ago. After that, the final voice of our trio will be Vic Rappaport, Chief Executive of Future Today, Smart TV Distributed Channel Organizer, and launcher of The Lego Channel 2 weeks ago. Also ahead, Viacom CBS strikes Miramax pay dirt, our classic trivia question, and don't forget the ET Plus press, folks. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a wonderful holiday gift, 3 free audiobooks, when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Delighted to have you with us on this Friday before Christmas 2019. Welcome once again to the Promo About Television, 90-minute future edition coming your way. 31 degrees, top of the hour. We want to have you involved in the conversation. We have some great guests coming your way, so get involved. How do you do that? You pick up the phone, you dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Our chat room is open for business. Already somebody's in the room. Thank goodness for that. And, of course, that is SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you're involved. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk or your speaker screen. Following instructions, other people can live with you. Our first future guest comes your way from Los Angeles after these news notes. Viacom CBS will pay film and TV maker Miramax $375 million for a 49% share of ownership. For that investment, Viacom CBS's Paramount division gets a multi-year first crack at developing, financing, producing, and distributing new TV projects for Miramax starting in 2020. Also, BN, Miramax's owner since 2016, will explore content opportunities on its own with Viacom CBS. The deal is anticipated to go into effect by the end of March 2020. Now some quickies. Netflix will keep Green Eggs and Ham on its 2020 play with a second season of original episodes based on the famous Dr. Seuss book. Next up for the Crown star Olivia Colman, Landscapers, an HBO Sky co-produced crime drama opus. And Modern Family co-star Sophia Vergara is meeting with Netflix, Fremantle, and other TV makers about a multi-opportunity arrangement when her prize-winning ABC series wraps next year. And that is news notes for today. As I mentioned, today is all about the future of television. What this meeting will be like next year and next decade. To kick things off, we have with us live from Los Angeles the CEO of a company called Hovercast, who made a terrific appearance earlier this month at the TV of Tomorrow show. It's great to have with us Eli Feldberg. Eli, welcome in.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So as we turn into this new year and decade, where do you see interactive TV going now that it is finally on the scene?
Ah, well, so many different things. I think what's funny about interactive is every once in a while you get these articles that says, is interactive the future of TV? Or even bolder statements saying interactive will be the future of TV. And I think it's partially true, but it's just going to be one future. It's not going to be everything. Not every show that we see on TV will be Bandersnatch-like, but I think there's a lot of opportunity to kind of invite user agency into television, right? Giving up a little bit of control to the viewers. And for me, my company deals with live interactivity, so shows that can be interactive in the moment in real time, and the audience can influence those shows. It's a little bit different than kind of the pre-planned stuff that you have with your Bandersnatches or Echo or the other kind of branching narrative interactive television and digital platforms. So for me, when I look to the future of interactive for live, I'm seeing more participatory media, a lot of gamification, polling, user-generated content being brought into the show. And we'll see as we kind of peer even further into the future, we'll start to see more personalization, different input devices coming into the play, not just remote controls or mouse or chat. You'll see all sorts of different inputs. Lots of new formats. I think there's an ample opportunity to kind of, as we sort of gamify TV, we have a chance to invent new types of games. There will certainly be lots of sports betting, and that will interact with the television display of sports. I think you'll see a lot of shoppable video and virtual goods, just to name a few things coming around the corner.
It seemed, Eli, that this was the year, that after so many years and decades of, is it going to happen, it will ever happen in our lifetime, we've had all sorts of experiments and trials and failures and so forth, it seemed that there was a perfect storm lining up to make things happen. You have the majority of American households having smart TV sets or smart devices, and you had artificial intelligence now being built in many of these devices, allowing them to control the set with their voice as well as with remote control, and it seemed to be the turning point, the trigger to having things like Bandersnatch, to have You versus Wild, both of which Netflix projects are now up for Producers Guild awards next year. You now have shoppable ads on Vudu, the Walmart video on demand product, but you also have services like Food Network Kitchen, which allow you to not only take part in interactive cooking classes, but also to call up recipes anytime you like, and even order groceries, kitchen utensils, ingredients, and get them delivered by Amazon same day or next day. And then you have Portal TV from Facebook. I'd like to get your thoughts about that. I think that's a very interesting venture coming up a little later on in our conversation. But what do you think about this? Do you think that we have arrived at a perfect storm where, because the technology is out there in a mass way and it's easier than ever before to interact, that that's what's triggered this?
I agree partially that the perfect storm has arrived. I would also add that more important than the technology and the platforms is really the audience. And I feel strongly that, you know, the technology has kind of been around, as you mentioned. We've been able to do forms of interactivity for a long time. For me, I think the big difference is we finally have this audience in Generation Z who are ready and interested in interacting. They've actually grown up interacting on different things like Snapchat. They talk to their favorite YouTube stars all the time. They actually are demanding to interact. And this is, to me, the big difference between the time before and that created this kind of perfect storm, as you mentioned, is we have this young audience coming up who wants to interact. So instead of, you know, when I started making interactive music videos 10 years ago, I would mention the word interactive and people would say, what is that? Well, a lot has changed in this 10 years. And the big difference to me, I think, is the audience demands it. And of course, when the audience demands something, the networks and studios and platforms will follow, especially, as you mentioned, where we're also kind of coinciding with the fact that young people don't watch TV as much anymore. So there is this perfect storm. I think the tech has improved, so that's definitely helped it. And but I think the main reason to look for this kind of sea change has been the audience. But I will add the other big part is I do believe that Bandersnatch was the defining mainstream moment for interactivity. It's really crucial that we have this kind of mainstream offering that is high production value, prestige content, that's also interactive and done in a slick way. So now that that's happened, I think the storm can arrive because people have a touch point that they can point to. Oh, Netflix did it. So it's not just kind of scrappy startups anymore or, you know, weird niche things. No, it's a big Netflix show that did it on a big, big level.
We're speaking with Eli Soundberg. He is the chief executive of Covercast, one of the folks trying to make the era of interactive TV happen. Simon Applebaum with you along for the ride. He's from Los Angeles. I'm from New York. And this is our future-oriented edition of Tomorrow We Televise on this Friday before Christmas 2019. Happy to have you aboard. If you have a question or comment for our guest, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We will have three episodes of our show coming your way Monday, Thursday, and Friday of next week and the week after. And our Monday episode next week will be coming your way 1 hour later than normal, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And it's a 90-minute episode for you. We will have a new service that just launched called New Sky Kids. It's a YouTube attraction. Now it's a smart TV and device attraction. And we'll have the chief executive officer, Felipe Adams, will be with us. Then we will have one of the top people in unscripted TV. We had him on earlier. Popular producer and director Ivan Udinski will be with us. We'll talk to him about where he sees unscripted television going in 2020 and beyond, and whether he might do some interactive television. And finally, Netflix launched a new series earlier this week. It was called Soundtrack. It used to be called Mixtape. It's a very interesting musical drama, and John Safran, the creator and executive producer of that series, you may know him for things like Gossip Girl and Quantico, is working on a Gossip Girl remake, by the way, for HBO Max next year. He will be with us as well. So join us for a 90-minute edition of Tomorrow We Televise, 2 days before Christmas, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. That's 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And guess what, Eli? I think we have a call, so we're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow We Televise. What's your name and where are you calling from? I'm sorry, I don't think we have the call right now, but I think that was from one of our guests coming up later on. So he's just paying attention to what we're doing, so that's great. And we'll be hearing from Vikram Mathur from Future Today, and we'll hear from him in about an hour from now. Eli, how soon do you think the platforms, because you say the audience is ready, how soon will the creative community, how soon will the platforms get involved? When will we see, for example, HBO Max, Peacock, Apple TV Plus, Amazon, Hulu, et cetera, jump in and do interactive programming?
I think it will be soon. I definitely know HBO is kind of doing some due diligence, trying to figure out how and when they're going to do their interactivity. So it's coming. I'm not so tapped into the business side of TV, so I won't make any big predictions there. But I think. I think it's definitely, you know, this next decade will be very interactive with TV, and we're going to see a lot of experimentation. On the creator level, you mentioned, will the creators be ready? That's a big one because new skills need to be learned. One of the things that sort of the lowest hanging fruit with interactivity is kind of choose your own adventure. Well, there's definitely a way to do it in a very gimmicky style, and there's a way to do it that's meaningful. And I think that it's going to take a little while for creators to understand what works and what doesn't in the format. So it's going to be a very experimental period. I definitely think that if creators can lean into the things that are meaningful, choices that matter, not just your red door, your blue door with no context. Things where you have context to the character, you have a deep story, and you make an emotional choice for that character. That's going to really pay back big. And I also think, you know, playing around with different elements of crowd play. Is the audience all playing it by themselves, or are they playing it together? Or some form of some hybrid of the two where audiences are in different clans or groups. There's so much that can be done. It's really exciting. I hope that we have a very, very experimental next decade with this these formats because it's not simple. There's a lot to it, and I think that people should really try and push the boundaries and really search for meaning in these interactions because you know, we don't want to just click on things just to click, like early mobile games, for instance. It's really important that when you're blending it with narrative, that there be some meaning behind these decisions that people are making.
One of the big hits this year on Disney Channel was the series Just Roll With It. We had the creators of the show on our program this summer. For those who don't know, that's the series where it's done before a live studio audience, and at various points in the course of every episode, the cast members go off stage, and the audience gets three choices to work with. Whatever choice is gets the majority vote, that's what happens, and the cast members have to improvise on the spot. And so does everybody else, too, involved in the making of the show. At one point, Disney Channel did a live episode of the program in October, a live hour, where the home audience was involved, as well as the studio audience. It seems that that might be another way to go, this idea of shows where if you're in the audience or at home, you could do interactivity together.
Oh, yeah. That's called crowd play. And I'm a big fan of it. I love the idea of the crowd working together to kind of co-create a show with the producers. I think it's a wonderful format. That's what we do at Hovercast, is kind of provide the tools to do that live. And I think that the example that you mentioned sounds amazing. Having producers and actors who are available to react and improvise to the whims of the audience. What a delight. That can be so fun. You know, we already know from going to improv shows that it can be really, really fun to make a suggestion and then have professionals go off and kind of create something new with it. And we really can do that now on TV if we want. So I'm excited about that. And we actually have kind of a formula that we've been working on at Hovercast that kind of ties into that crowd play aspect that we call prompt, participate, react, and reward. So these are like four elements that lead to this kind of successful interactive live streaming feedback loop. Basically, the prompt element means you prompt the audience to do something, you tell them to do something. The participate is them engaging, and those engagement numbers go way up, which is cool, especially if you give them something good to do. Then the react portion is the show curating and integrating this participation into the broadcast. So this is the piece where the show is listening to what the audience is saying and then either kind of bringing it to life, subverting it, showcasing it in different ways. There's a lot that can be done there. And then the reward piece is how the audience views their impact on the show. They might see even their name in a shout out. It kind of like creates this connection between the viewers and the producers of the show. And that feedback loop can kind of continue on and on during a live broadcast. It sounds like it did in the example that you mentioned. And it's truly a win-win for everyone involved. People who are watching the show feel like they're a part of it. They have a stake in the content. The producers, meanwhile, get all this great, are able to leverage these great ideas from their audience. They get more engagement. They get an audience who wants to watch till the end, they have their attention in this attention economy, so to speak. So it's just this sort of wonderful feedback loop that I noticed for the first time in 2015 when working on our first interactive live stream, and it's really what made me fall in love with this format, and I feel like there's a huge potential there to kind of experiment with those four variables. What do we prompt the audience to do? How do they participate? How do we react and then reward them? And for kind of people looking to create content in this format, I think that that's the kind of formula for success, to kind of play with those variables and figure out a way to make the audience happy, and as well as kind of keeping control as a producer yourself.
Now, at the TV of Tomorrow show earlier this month, you showed something you did with Old Spice that was quite interesting, and it was an example of what could be a TV future. This wasn't a TV project, but this is an example of where things might be going, where you have a live situation going on one side of the screen and a Twitter or Twitch social media feed on the other side of the screen, and the Twitter or the social media feed can dictate what happens with the live feed. Talk about that, this whole Spice thing you did.
Yeah, so this was, We've done a few of these interactive live streams with Old Spice, and this one in particular was called the Old Spice Foam Zone. So it was an obstacle course game show that happened on Twitch, YouTube Live, and Facebook Live, all at the same time. It was 2 days, 7 hours a day, so 14-hour broadcast, and it was like a Legends of the Hidden Temple style show, American Ninja Warrior style obstacle course show, except the twist was that the audience was able to affect the obstacles and by voting on polls and change what happened. So on the most basic level, typing into the Twitch chat, for instance, could affect a platform that dropped one of the contestants into a foam pit. That was kind of the simplest aspects. However, we also were looking at the chat in real time, and whenever they had good ideas, we brought them to life. And so that's the sort of reactive portion where you can kind of look to your audience insights and leverage them in the show. And it was a really, really cool show where kind of people could choose their favorites, root them on, and suggest ideas that sort of made their way onto the broadcast.
We are speaking with Eli Stomberg from Hovercast, one of the folks trying to make the new era of interactive TV happen on your smart TV set or smart TV device like Amazon Fire TV, Chromecast, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised on our future-oriented 90-minute edition of the program All About Television. Simon Hackman with you live from New York. 3 more minutes with Eli. If you have a question or comment for him, ring it in, 646-652-2906 to be interactive with us or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up today after Christmas, we'll be with you on our regular time, 3 p.m. New Pacific, and joining us will be Rutger Bruning. He is the chief executive officer of a very interesting venture called Story Terrace, which has been doing a little bit of thinking about where TV has gone this year and where it might go next year. I think you'll find his thoughts quite fascinating. That's Rutger Bruning from Story Terrace. Thursday, day after Christmas, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tawabi Televised. And 1 week from today, my lead guest will be, with Richard scheduled for today, we have rescheduled him for tomorrow, for next Friday, the executive producer of the new Fox series, 30 Dancing, Mike Yurchuk, will be joining us. We'll also have our annual feature, Tomorrow Will Be Televised Remembers. Remember the people in front of and behind the camera who passed away this year. That's Thursday and Friday, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What is Hovercast working on now? Are you working on an interactive TV series? Are you working on interactive advertising? What's in the pipeline for your company in 2020?
Well, we're working with some politicians. And so we found that our tool has become very useful for political candidates because not only can we broadcast a variety of their different offerings, whether it be a town hall meeting or internal training, but we can tie engagement to donations or anything that they want to happen, whether it be signups, donations, et cetera. We can tie those things to gamified elements on the live broadcast and on the graphics. So that's really exciting if you think about kind of having a widget that's a meter, for instance, and it's tied to ActBlue donations, and you could promise something on the live broadcast that if the donation meter fills up to the top, X will happen. And that's pretty strong way of incentivizing people to donate and kind of gamifying donations. So that's one thing. We're definitely working with a bunch of brands and trying to get into TV because, you know, we were born out of digital on places like Twitch and YouTube, but there's no reason why our software shouldn't be on TV and kind of bridge the gap from digital to television. Basically, what our software does is it provides a graphic overlay that can be baked into the video and outputted to any kind of screen that you want. And it looks like CNN or ESPN style live graphics with the added component of audience participation. And so we can do polls, trivia, meters, but perhaps what we do best is curate and feature audience chat. And so we have this amazing audience dashboard for moderating and curating live chat as it comes in. As you can imagine, the chat moves really fast when you have a big show with a lot of viewers. There's a lot of chat happening at the same time. And we have developed a system to really quickly organize that chat and display it on graphics. And what you can do with that as a show producer is audience Q&A, audience sentiment, or even more interesting things where the audience is controlling a character on the screen, making suggestions, chatting. It's a really fun way of basically removing the barrier between the audience and the show. And so we've built the tools for that, and we are empowering broadcasters to take advantage of that and make their shows a little bit more participatory.
Do you think we will see an interactive debate of presidential candidates by the end of the decade where you can register your views or put questions in or even, in fact, make donations while the debate is on the air?
Yes, I do. Yeah, there's no reason that that Democratic debate last night couldn't have had audience questions coming in. And I think, you know, that's places have started to experiment with that. But yeah, I mean, when you're talking about connecting with your audience, politics makes a lot of sense to bring real voices into the show, and we have the tech to do it now, so why not?
Before we go there, I want to get your thoughts about Portal TV, the new product from Facebook, which looks like it's going to be their play into smart TV devices. It started out as video chat, and it also includes the first ever augmented reality on the television set, where you can, while somebody on the other end is telling a story, for example, you can have augmented reality animation pop up on the screen and other things too. But it seems that Facebook wants to do more with this. And I'm curious what you think about what Facebook is doing with Portal TV.
You know, I don't know too much about Portal TV, to be honest. I do see that Facebook is investing heavily in hardware for augmented reality and mixed reality, you know, with the Oculus Quest and all that they're doing on the XR side of things. It's definitely, I think there's a very big, bright future for augmented reality and television and sort of blending those two together, both from a way that we watch TV with augmented reality glasses eventually to viewing new types of TV shows in AR. That will be really cool. But, you know, Facebook does have, I worry about Facebook just because of the kind of damage they've done to their reputation surrounding data and personalization. So I'm not sure they are the player to usher in kind of the future of interactive TV. I know they're developing things around it, but their trust, their brand trust is pretty low right now. So I am skeptical that they will be the player to kind of usher in the bright future that interactive TV has.
Well, we will certainly see. The Muppet campaign that they're doing has been working very well on television. At some point, Facebook will have to say how it's doing, but there's one thing that's very clear so far, and we have invited Facebook, by the way, to come on the talk about Portal TV, but it looks like this can be much more than just video chat. As big as video chat could be, this will be much more than video chat. It very well could be, as I said, their major move as a smart TV device. We will see. If you want to know more about what Hovercast is doing, here's where you go online, www.hovercast.com, www.hovercast.com. Eli Sundberg, the chief executive of Hovercast, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for getting our future conversation off to a great start. All the very best to you and your crew for a wonderful 2020 and beyond.
Thank you, Simon. Happy holidays. Thanks for having me on.
A pleasure, Eli. All the greatest. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Eli Sundberg joining us live from Hovercast in Los Angeles. More tomorrow, Eli is coming away. Future-oriented, but first of all, to the fine folks at Audible.com. Are you still looking this late in the holiday season for a gift for Hanukkah, for Christmas, for Kwanzaa, etc.? I got one for you. It's a trial run for you or someone you love in Audible.com. And that trial run can conclude three audiobooks for you, one of them being the new bestseller by David Baldacci, who a couple years ago did a Hallmark Hall of Fame presentation for Hallmark Channel called The Christmas Tree. We had him on the program at that time. Terrific author and terrific guest as well. The book is called One Good Deed. That's One Good Deed. And you can get it right now as part of a trial run with Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, including the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's original audio productions, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and One Woman, One Man shows. You can listen to any Audible thing on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get three free audiobooks, two of them Audible Originals, 1 month trial, great customer service from the fine folks at Audible's parent, Amazon.com. So for a holiday gift for yourself or someone you love, nothing like the gift of sound, the gift of hearing, and changing the way you hear the world through Audible.com. Remember, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up next, we'll go live to Paris, France, and we will meet the developer of Apple's Apple TV, first ever winner of its App of the Year. The product is called The Explorers, and John Francois Guang will join us live from Paris after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradioandspreaker.com. Together, reaching more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Christmas Eve with Five Smooth Stones, live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. That's Five Smooth Stones, a live Christmas Eve presentation on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of our 90-minute future edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised for this Friday before Christmas, 2019. Sam, I'm with you live from New York. Hope your holiday season is going great. A cool 31 degrees at the top of the hour, and we have more great guests with looks about where the future of TV is going, interactively, digitally, and through smart TV sets and devices. And if you have questions or comments for our guests ahead, all you got to do is make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04. We have a bunch of people now in the room, so get involved. We want to bring you in the conversation. If you know Apple TV, a device that's been around now for, 5 years or so, you know that it's more than just Apple TV Plus, which launched a few weeks ago. It is over 10,000 individual apps, everything from being able to order Airbnb and Zillow to ordering pizza through Papa John's and tickets through StubHub and a whole lot more. Well, this year, for the very first time, Apple decided to give an award to its Apple, what they call it, Apple TV App of the Year. It also went to Apple Arcade. That's the video game service that launched on smart TV sets and smart devices as well earlier this fall. The winner of the first ever Apple TV App of the Year award, announced a few weeks ago, is The Explorers. It actually comes from France. And joining us live from Paris, where it's now past 9:30 p.m. their time, is the developer of The Explorers, Jean-Francois Guang. Jean-Francois, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. Congratulations to you and your colleagues on making this app. What is The Explorers? What kind of interactive app is it?
Oh, yeah. So, first of all, The Explorers is more than, it's an app, but it's a whole initiative. We started with we all know that our Earth is sick. And we made a comparison with the Earth and our own body, and we know that both of them are composed of 70% water and 30% solid. And we felt like we needed to do a checkup of the Earth, and so we started to build an Earth inventory. And the first initiative of building that Earth inventory was to make expeditions to get the knowledge of course, the biodiversity, all the regional endemic species, ancestral culture, and monuments. So it's not only on biodiversity. And we started to go on expeditions around the world, filming in the very best quality of images. So we are filming in 4K, 8K HDR for compatible devices. And we've been to Honduras, South Africa, to the Arctic, the Marquesas Islands, and a lot more places around the globe to get the very best of these regions and to propose that to our customers through a series of different episodes. And so so that was the first part of the of our initiatives. And then it became very clear to us that we couldn't like map all the world by ourselves, and that we needed the help of the of the of the community. And we felt that our the mobile was a great way to address that. So has the TV was a great way to broadcast our content. And so we've built a community around this Hearth inventory that that we offer. And that's how the Explorers came alive.
So it sounds like this app is more than just videos. I believe you also have graphics, and you have, like, as we were talking about in the last segment, a social media feed where people can see and react to what you're showing them.
Exactly. So we have a part where we broadcast our own content, and there is also a part of the application that is dedicated to our community. So our own content is the content that we produce. We are we have directors, producers, so it's real TV, in fact. And this part is very high quality images, 4K, 8K, HDR. We also have on our expeditions, we have people that drawers, we have photographers, and so behind every drawing, every photography, we explain what's the story behind the picture and how it is important to our Earth inventory. And on the community part, that's really nice, because when I was hearing at what Eli Steinberg was saying just before, he talked about that feedback loop, and that's really what we the kind of experience that we try to develop inside our app, is that we want to to empower everybody and to to give the opportunity to everybody to become an explorer. So we have a running contest and every 3 months everybody can post their pictures, their best videos, and tell their stories. They don't have to go to some place very far from their home. I mean, there is a wonders all around us, so you can just take your camera and make some pictures and participate to that contest. And the winner, every 3 months, we take three people, and the three winners come with us on an expedition. So it's kind of empowering people and encouraging everyone to be aware of the biodiversity, of the great wonders that our Earth is offering, and rewarding them by going to places they would probably never have been. That's how we bring interactivity, and how we define an app that is very different from just broadcasting content. We want everybody to be part of that great adventure.
How did Apple TV get to run your app? How long ago did you start there? Was it a case of you approaching them or them approaching you? How did you make it happen?
Okay, that's a great question. So first, as I said, we first started with the iPhone application because we believe that most people take pictures with their camera on their phone, and so it was pretty clear that we wanted people to contribute using their camera on the phone. The ideas came from the digital team, and it became very clear that if we wanted to broadcast our content in 4K HDR, we needed to make to publish that app to the Apple TV. The Apple TV is very is really amazing because we are also compatible with our other devices based on Google or even Samsung TVs. But what I found, and I'm an iOS developer, so of course I'm really partial on this. But we can see that the performance that the Apple TV is bringing to the developers is amazing. A UI that is very interactive. We have pre-play of the the videos are autoplayed while you navigate inside the interface, and that really brings alive a lot of content that we are proposing to our users. So that's the Apple TV. It was really clear that once you you have content in 4K HDR that you want to bring to the users, you need to be on their TVs. And the Apple TV was the very first device we addressed because it had that power to deliver a great content, but also a great experience. And as you said previously with the previous interview, this is important to not only to bring a good content, but to bring a great experience. And the Apple TV is great for that because it's so powerful that you can like display a lot of images, display great videos, and all this alongside.
Of the more than 10,000 apps you can have now on Apple TV, the Explorers is the first one to win a new annual award. It's Apple TV's App of the Year Award. That award was given out, by the way, by Apple Management here in New York earlier this month. And we have got the developer of that winner, the Explorers, Jean-Pascal Gouin. He's with us live from Paris, France, where it's now past 9:30 p.m. their local time, right here live on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appelbaum with you live from New York, where it's just past 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. Happy to have you with us wherever you're listening to us on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker on this Friday before Christmas 2019. Be in our conversation dealing with the world of TV's future, a future of smart TV, interactive TV, etc. Make the call and join us, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04Binding. Remember, coming up next Monday, we will be with you at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, with another 90-minute edition of our show. And joining us then, we will have the Chief Executive Officer of one of the newest smart TV plumbing services. It's called New Sky Kids. Felipe Adams will be joining us. Then we will have popular unscripted TV producer director Ivan Zanitsky. He's back with us. He was with us on our program earlier this year. We'll get his thoughts about where unscripted TV is going in 2020 and beyond, and whether he might do some interactive TV. And from the brand new Netflix series that premiered earlier this week, Soundtrack, formerly known as Mixtape, we'll have the creator executive producer Josh Safran. You may know him as the creator of Quantico on ABC the last few seasons. He also was involved with Gossip Girl, which is coming back in a reboot fashion later next year on HBO Max. And he's got another project or two in the works as well. Josh Safran joining us live as part of our 90-minute edition Monday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Remember, we're going to be on an hour later than normal. 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's been the reaction of the Apple TV audience to your app, and how has it influenced what kind of things you cover, what kind of explorations you undertake?
Okay, technical or natural explorations?
Natural history and inspiration in your subject matter.
Okay. The reaction was amazing. We've always been featured on Apple TV, so maybe that's a tip for the people that are developing apps right now. There are very few applications compared to the iOS App Store on the Apple TV. So if you get your app known by Apple, which is not easy, but you can go to appstore.com/promote. And you can pitch your app to the editorial team of the App Store. That's how we did it, because well, we are a small team and we are based in France, so it can feel like it's tough to get featured in the US, for example. But it really started like that, appstore.com/promote, and in fact we had a great support from Apple from the very start of that application, and the reaction I think of Apple from the very start, we got featured on the App Store in France and in Europe, and I think that they see the downloads and they see how people react and how they rate the application, and so I guess that that helps us to stay featured. But as I said, there are pretty few applications and pretty few quality applications. So if you make a good job on the TV and that you make a good job on promoting to the App Store editorial team, you get a great chance to get featured quite a lot. So we always had a large user base on TV, on Apple TV. And of course, thanks to that award, that really emphasizes that figures. We doubled our user base in 4 days. Only, and also the number of contributions. We also have in-app purchases inside the app, and of course, the number of subscriptions was multiplied by 4. So that was a great reaction to the content. We had a lot of great messages from people all around the globe. But the most important thing to us is the different contributions that we see on the platform, and we see that people are uploading their content, are uploading pictures, are sharing their passion for a specific place or moment or tradition. And that's really our everyday reward when we see that picture, that content, and we can share them on our favorite TV.
In addition to Apple TV, you're also on other smart TV sets and devices. You mentioned Samsung. I would guess it would be here in the United States plus other parts of the world. What other devices or sets do you want?
Okay. So we are on the TV part, we are compatible with every Google TV. So we have a Google TV application, and we also developed the very first. I think it's the very first app that you can cross check that for me. But the very first app for broadcasting 8K HDR content to the Samsung. So it's a Samsung app. So we were the very first app to be able to stream 8K HDR content directly to the Samsung app. So it's the only actor, I think, today that offers a TV, 8K TV, and we were one of the very first to be providing this content for this amazing TV. Honestly, we have one at the office. It's really amazing. And we always talk about interactivity inside the TV, but we are really betting on having great content and great quality content because we have a great exposure on a lot of content. And what really makes the difference to us is having a great content that is really outstanding. And that's our bet at the Explorers. And having our content broadcasted on 8K TV is amazing. And has all the different TV makers will offer that. We'll be able to push these amazing images to all the different TVs available on the market. And I think 2020 will be amazing for that.
Yeah. What is the fact that of all the thousands of apps that have been created for Apple TV and running on Apple TV here in the United States, all over the world so far, that you're the first to get this award and that finally Apple is recognizing, at least to some degree, other apps, other things beside Apple TV Plus or Apple Arcade, that that at least they are now starting to say, you know what, it's time to recognize these apps, and if we can do it with some sort of annual award, let's do it, and that you're the first to get the award.
Yeah, that was amazing because I knew about this, but it's kind of all the time a secret and you don't know all the specifics about it. But I first time I heard about this, I think it was mid October, so it was pretty late. But and my first reaction, I developed several apps in the past and I had the chance to have some of them featured as App of the Year, but in France, I think five or six of the apps I developed. I'm a very first iOS developer. I was in the beta program, so first 500 guys who put their hands on the iOS SDK at that time. I've climbed the Everest. Honestly, that was the best part of my career. First of all, I must say that it's great because Apple is rewarding applications and they are putting a great focus on that application. And they are not only they are doing this worldwide, but it's also they are not only focusing on who's the biggest actor on the market. So it was great for such a small company as we are, because I think the digital team is only 8 people. So we are a small team, and it's the Explorers. It's 30 people when we are not on an expedition, and we double the size when we are doing expeditions. So we are a small company, and having that kind of focus was really a surprise. I think what makes the difference is, and for the people who are making apps right now listening, it's I think it's interesting. Is first of all, it's how your app leverages the capabilities of the device you're in. At the end of the day, Apple's goal is to sell devices, and I think that if your app helps them sell devices by using their technologies, I think you're on a good path of getting something from Apple. So inside our app, we use Core ML. We use a lot of technologies like Apple Sign in-app purchases, and a lot of their specific technologies. And plus, we provide great 4K HDR content. Some of them are free. So it helps to kind of demonstrate how the Apple TV is amazing. So I think that's part of it. But, you know, Apple, they also are storytellers. And I think they wanted to tell a story about how they feel Earth is important and how they, well, maybe feel they can help people try to protect or at least make the inventory of our Earth and its wonders. And I think that they wanted to share that that's the story. We know that they struggle to select the different applications. And I think that the fact that we were telling that story and that I think it's a concern for them was very important in their final decision, even though that I have no specific ideas because they didn't tell, of course.
John Pasquale Guang, he is the developer of the new prize-winning app, The Explorers. The app is not new, but the award is new. It's Apple TV's first ever App of the Year award, and that app received it earlier this month here in New York. And John Pasquale joined us live from Paris this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Finally, I'm with you live from New York. Glad you're with us this Friday afternoon. Stay tuned, more on ITV Conversation coming up. Also coming up, our Crafty Trivia Question of the Week. We want you to interact with us for a nice prize. We'll give you the question before the top of the hour. What kind of things do you want to do with the Explorers next year? What kind of content? Where do you want to explore? What are your plans content-wise for 2020?
Oh, that's interesting. First of all, we are still we are doing a new expedition every month, so that will enrich our platform and bring new content to our paid users and also free users, because we also offer some small content to free users. So every month there is an expedition going on, and trust me, that's kind of a big move every month. So we just came back from New Caledonia, and we are moving to some other places, and you can follow our different expeditions within the app. It took us a year and a half to build all our digital services with a great team that I use the opportunity that I have to thank them, because I know they're listening. So it took us a year and a half to build that digital platform, and now that we released it and we have such a great audience on the platform, we are testing different kind of formats. We are wondering what people will prefer. We have a 1 minute on the Earth, we have 3 minute stories, we push new content about the Earth, news kind of news media every day. And so right now we are really focused on experiencing all the different forms of content that we can provide. So video, pictures, stories, with different size, and see how people react about this to be able to adjust our editorial. So we have, I think, above 2,000 hours of video content and tens of thousands of pictures. So we have that great content, and right now we are just seeing how people react within the apps, but not only within the apps, the Apple TV app, but also the different apps, because we know that the audience doesn't have the people don't have the same behaviors when they are on the smartphones inside our mobile app, or when they are in their TV, in their couch watching their TV. And so we want to get some data and produce our content based on these specifics. So that's what we're going to focus on mainly for this year, is to give a better exposure on our content, and something that really fits the people need when they need to when they are looking at our content.
Before we leave you, where do you see interactive content for television going next year and this decade? How big a medium do you think interactive TV will be?
Well, I was really interested about what Eli Stenberg said before. I think there's not only one direction. There is many, many directions. If I look at the Explorers and the Explorers, I think it's we can really bring something. I love seeing people watching our content. I think it's a family time that we are making. It's the kind of family content that you want to see and don't want to be disturbed. So I'm not really sure that we need, during the broadcast, we need to have a lot of tweets popping and stuff. So I think it's kind of a quiet moment that you want to have, a quality family time that you want to have, which is pretty appropriate to the holiday season. But I'm also interested in sport, and I think each type of content is going to bring their own interactivity in some ways. I love the Bandersnatch. It was really, really interesting. And I think that on Sport TV, you can, for example, when you look at a sports team, I don't know if you, Simon, have a specific team that you follow and love, but if you're looking at a football game or baseball game or basketball game, you are really focused on the content, and I think that you don't really want to be disturbed. At least that's my case. So I don't want my phone to ring. Maybe to speak with my friends, and I think that this kind of interactivity could be brought by the TV, and that will help me not having my phone rings, or I could ignore the notifications pretty easily. So, but I think there's a lot of things to explore. What is interesting is that we used to be doing TV for the same way for decades, and today it's like everybody is a startup in terms of program, because and it was pretty clear with the previous interview you had, we don't really know yet what is going to be working, and that everybody's trying. And I think that having that large amount of initiative is great, especially because I think 99% of these initiatives might die, but we might find something very interesting on some content very specific that will change for good how we watch TV. And as you said before, the TV is losing, less and less people are watching TV, and it's kind of the attention of the users are cannibalized. So I think that if we can find some good interactivity on the right program, people will still gather around that big screen to explore new contents in a new way with new interactions. So I think it's never been amazing to be working on these areas and on TV right now, especially because there's a lot of challenges and very few hard knowledge on what's going to be successful.
Yeah. In fact, Dish Network announced that its satellite customers that have the Hopper service as of today can get Google Nest's video doorbell service, where on their television set they get a video notification with graphics of who is at their front door. Will that become an interactive service for the masses? We will see as time goes along. Again, The Explorers is this year's winner of the first ever Apple TV App of the Year Award. If you want to know more about that app and all of the other Apple TV apps available on that device, here's where you go, www.apple.com. It's www.apple.com. And for more details about The Explorers specifically, there is a website for them. It is theexplorers.com, theexplorers.com. Again, The Explorers, this year's first ever winner of the annual, what will become an annual deal, Apple TV App of the Year Award. Jean-Francois Guang, the developer of The Explorers, congratulations on winning this award, the first Apple TV app to do so. Congratulations on the great year you've had, and also getting on other smart TV sets and devices. All the very best to you and your crew for a wonderful 2020, for a happy holiday season first, and then a wonderful 2020 and beyond with your service. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Simon. It was a pleasure, and have a happy holidays. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. A wonderful holiday season. Good night where you are from Paris. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Jean-Francois Guang from The Explorers joining us live from Paris, France. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We launched it on Monday. No winner yet. We're looking for our third weekly winner in a row. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win the book Identify Yourself by one of our guests from earlier this year, the creator of Night Flight, which is now its own smart TV service, Stuart S. Shapiro. Harry Morgan was a perennial co-star in many a television series between the mid-1950s and the mid-1980s. Some of you know him, of course, for his Emmy-winning role as Colonel Sherman Potter on MASH, or as Officer Bill Gannon on the first remake of Dragnet, alongside its creator, Jack Webb. The Summer Bride, back in the mid-1950s, was Harry Morgan's first TV series as a co-star. The question, what was his last? We'll give you a hint. It was in the mid-1980s, and it was based on a classic Broadway play, an Oscar-winning movie. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full mailing address. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win Identify Yourself by Stuart S. Shapiro. And if you missed the question a moment ago, we'll try to repeat it for the end of today's program. If not, post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, play in, and all the very best. Coming up in our next half hour, we will conclude our three-sided look at where TV may be going interactively with someone who just put the Lego channel on the air. He's been at it doing services for smart TV set devices for quite a while. The company's full of future today. He is the head of it. His name is Vic Rand Mathur. You'll meet him live from San Francisco after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradioandspeaker.com. Together, more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Blog Talk Radio Speaker, your home tonight for Las Vegas Sports Lounge. I'm sure I have a lot to talk about, the college football bowl games, NFL going into some very, very big games over the next few days. Check out Las Vegas Sports Lounge tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, Las Vegas Sports Lounge right here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Don't forget, BetBTR and Speaker 24/7 at YouTube.com. More and more available on smart TV sets and devices. Welcome back to the Marvy Televised. What were those just joining us at the top of the hour? Simon Ambon with you live from the web you are. 31 degrees at the top of the hour. It does get better as the weekend comes by. I'd like to have you with us this Friday before Christmas. We're in the third half hour of our special 90-minute look at the future of television, especially the interactive future. If you have a question or comment for our guest ahead, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio Speaker, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. Maybe we have somebody or two in the room, and you can either use that to put your thoughts on the air or give us a call. Either way, we hear you. Don't forget, Facebook timeline, you can still use to get other people in on the conversation. So you can click on your Blog Talk Radio Speaker screen, follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you and with us. My final guest for this 90-minute look at TV's future has been working on such a future for smart TV sets and devices for quite a while. His company is called Future TV, and earlier this month, they launched the Lego channel. We're about to hear how that's doing and what they've got plans of for 2020. Joining us live from San Francisco in our internet radio system, the chief executive of Future TV, Vikrant Mathur. Vikrant, thanks for being here.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. How is Lego Channel doing?
It's doing great. It's been a few weeks now, and it's exceeded our expectations. It's been very, very good, I would say.
And how did it get started? This is something that sort of came out of the blue until a press release came out 2 weeks ago saying, hey, look, we're on the air.
Right. So in terms of how we got started, are you talking specifically about the company or the Lego channel?
Well, let's start with the Lego channel, then we'll get into Future TV today.
Got it. Yeah, so with respect to the Lego channel, I've been in discussions with the team at the company for over 2 years now. And I think as a general trend, you would see that there's more and more focus on streaming, on over-the-top devices, on being direct to consumer, and making the content available directly to the consumer for consumption through these streaming devices. And so Lego, like most of the brands, content companies, have been thinking about this for a while, and we had been talking to them for a while. And over the course of our conversations, we figured out that this was something that would be very, very interesting. And again, another way for them to distribute their content and make it available on platforms and devices that they didn't have a presence on. So it made sense from a distribution perspective, and the timing was right. And so we're very, very fortunate and happy to be working with the Lego team to make this content and their channel available on the various streaming devices.
Vic Rock, for those who think that this is, variations on the Lego movies that have been big hits and brought on theaters and television over the last couple of years, that's not the case. There's over like 1,000 videos, they're live action, they're animated, animations, all different styles, and there's a lot of versatility to this service. Explain more about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, from a content perspective, It's an amazing collection of content that's being made available. And we've obviously launched with the library, but then there's plans to continue to add more content and make more available. So exactly to the point that you just said, there's, from a diversity perspective, there's shows like Ninjago where you can watch, you know, full-length episodes and really just binge, and there's multiple seasons available. But then there's also content which is, you know, short form perhaps, snackable, live action, tips, tutorials, for not just only for kids, but also content that parents can enjoy with their kids. So I think it's an amazing collection of content, and we're just getting started. We're going to be continuing to work. We'll continue to work with the LEGO team and just continue to add the content. So I'm really excited. I have a 4-year-old son, and I often sit with him and watch the channel. So it's, you know, outside of the professional aspect of it, personally as a parent, it brings me a lot of joy.
Your company, Future Today, was started in 2011, which puts you as one of the first companies to explore the possibility of creating original content 24/7 for smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And here we are now, 9 years later, the majority of households now have these products. More and more of these products have artificial intelligence that allow you to control what you watch or how you use the TV set with your voice as well as with remote control. What gave you and your colleagues the foresight to start this venture in the first place? And what do you think now about how you're operating in this world where smart TV is prevalent, interactive TV is now on the way up, and so forth?
Yeah, you know, it was, you know, we stumbled upon it, I would say. We started our company in 2006, and this was around the same time that YouTube had been acquired by Google. Video online was just getting started, very, very nascent. And so our original idea was to build a video platform for food and cooking-related content through which consumers could come and find content that they could enjoy. It's 7 in the evening. You want to make meatballs and pasta. If you're anything like me, you have no idea how to do it. Back then, you could go to search engines and search for text and picture-based recipes. Or our idea was you could come to our platform, where if we knew enough about you in terms of your taste preferences, in terms of your dietary restrictions, health-based needs, we'd be able to put together a curated set of content, video content, that you could consume on demand from the comfort of either your living room or your kitchen. And so that was the original idea that we started with. And in our pursuit of building and growing that service, which is still around, it's called iFood.tv. We ended up launching apps on various mobile phones. And then in 2010, when streaming devices like Roku, Boxy, Yahoo had a product called the Yahoo Connected TV, which was a toolbar on Samsung televisions. Google had just launched Google Television, announced it in partnership with Sony and others. And as these devices were coming about, we had launched our app, iFood TV, on many of these devices and platforms. And this was about the same time when Netflix was moving away from its DVD business and investing in streaming. And as we were looking at the landscape change in front of us with Netflix focusing so much on streaming, and we were looking at the numbers that we were seeing across desktop, mobile, and connected television, what we saw literally blew us away. We noticed that the engagement that we were seeing on connected television was about 15 to 20 times higher than what we were seeing on desktop, and about, you know, 5 to 8 times higher than what we were seeing on mobile devices. And so that really made us take a step back and start thinking of what the evolution of this industry is going to look like. And if Netflix were to be successful, and we thought that they would, we felt that there would be other content companies that would come into the marketplace and would want to make their content available onto all of these different streaming devices and services. And we felt that from the perspective of a content company, a media company, for them to be successful on these various different streaming devices, they would need a lot of technology in terms of hosting, encoding, streaming, content management system, app development, and building out a presence on all of these different devices. There would be help from an editorial perspective in terms of looking at the metrics, looking at the numbers, trying to figure out or make sense of, you know, who's watching what and what type of content is working the best. They would need help perhaps with audience development and marketing and bringing eyeballs to the content that they were putting out. And then finally, monetization. And from a monetization perspective, Weaver, since the very, very beginning, very bullish on free ad-supported content. And so we felt that subscriptions, again, from a consumer perspective, there's only so many subscriptions that you could have, and we felt that that's a game that the big boys can play, so to speak. But for the vast majority of, you know, mid to long tail content, especially when it comes to content that appeals to specific niches, we felt that free ad supported was the way to go. And so that's really what we've focused on since the very, very beginning. And, you know, this was 2011 that we decided to essentially shift our focus because we believed in the future of connected television and streaming, and focus solely on helping our content partners get distribution, eyeballs, and monetization on streaming devices and platforms. So we've been, like you said, we've been doing this since 2010, 2011. Back when we started, we thought we were maybe 3 to 4 years at the most ahead of the curve, and here we are, you know, in 2019. But I think, it's finally going mainstream. I think, you know, both from a consumer perspective as well as from a content and technology perspective, I think streaming is finally become mainstream. People are using it to consume content. And content owners are recognizing the value of it because they really see this demand for content shift from, you know, traditional linear with the drops in ratings and whatnot to services like Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime. And so everybody is now embracing these devices and platforms. And that's really the most exciting part for us, because we've been evangelizing this shift and transition and calling for it, both within kind of the business community with content creators, brands, and advertisers. And so it's really exciting for us to kind of see that shift finally happen over these years.
The LEGO Channel, which premiered early this month, is the latest example of a smart TV, smart device service distributed primarily or exclusively through these products with help from Future Today. That's the company we're talking about right now. Its chief executive is Vic Clapmathur. He joins us live from San Francisco this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tommy Appel with you live from New York. Have a question or a comment? Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple048. Remember, we're going to be with you Monday at a special time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and then on next Thursday and Friday, days after Christmas, that Thursday and Friday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Joining us on Thursday, we have Werner Bruning. He's the chief executive officer of a very interesting company called Story Terrace that compiles stories about what's taking place in this American life. And he's got some very interesting things to say about TV's future. We'll hear from him on Thursday. And on Friday, rescheduled from today, we'll have Mike Yomchik. He is the executive producer of Fox's new series, Flirty Dancing, featuring Janet Tawan. So join us Thursday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, post-Christmas, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Going from one decade to another, Vikram, what do you think of the landscape right now with smart TV, set, and device services? And what is, besides the LEGO Channel, what are some of the other services you've been able to get off the ground in recent months?
Sure. So from to the first part of your question, just from a outlook future perspective, I think it's a very, very exciting time to be in the media industry. I think the landscape is changing around us as we speak, where I think every 3 to 6 months things look so different. But I think the one thing that I think we can all agree upon is streaming is here to stay. And services like Netflix have changed our consumption habits, where we want to access, as consumers, we want to access content wherever we are, whenever we want it, and on whatever device is in front of us and is most convenient to us, right? And so that has really changed our consumption habits, where even at home, even I have a cable subscription, but a lot of the content that I consume, I would DVR it, and then I might watch it on the weekend, or I might watch it, you know, 3 episodes, you know, together on a Thursday night when I have time enough for the kids to sleep, right? So I think that's really the biggest shift that's happening. And, you know, with respect to the Lego channel, we see that more with the kids as opposed to the adult audience, where, again, kids have been growing up in this YouTube, Netflix environment, where if my 4-year-old wants to watch Mickey Mouse, he wants to watch it now. The concept of, you know, turning on the Disney Channel and waiting for, you know, another hour to pass by when Mickey Mouse would air is a concept that's alien to him. And that's a really, really important point, because these kids who are growing up with this experience are going to be the consumers of tomorrow and the next decade. And for them to be able to, you know, go back to that linear experience, I think is going to be very, very difficult, right? Appointment viewing, I think is dead. And so I think it's a phenomenal time to be in the industry, where the landscape's changing so much. Consumption habits are changing so much, and how the content is consumed is changing so much, right? Not just from the perspective of the devices and the underlying protocols that are used to consume the content, but also the formats and the mechanisms that are used to consume the content, right? You touched briefly upon interactivity on television and how content that's being produced would be produced differently, given this kind of, you know, two-way communication that can now happen, because, you know, everything is kind of an IP-based platform, right? So I think it means a lot of changes. It means a lot of new exciting things that are possible, whether it be from a content production standpoint, whether it be from a consumer, you know, consumption interactivity standpoint, or whether it be, you know, for us from the brand interactions and advertising standpoint, right? So I feel it's a very, very exciting time in the industry.
Vikram, one of the things that we're going to be watching this coming year is Echo. That is the service,
right,
that involves Samsung, the major smart TV set maker, Walmart, the nation's largest retailer, MGM, top programming producer, and venture capitalist. It's currently an interactive service that's available on laptops and on smartphones. They are now making deals with major league people in the creative community, like Justin Lin of Fast and Furious fame, Barry Levinson, the Oscar-winning director of Rain Man and The Natural, and a whole bunch of other folks. It looks like next year will be the year that they make that an interactive television platform, either through Vudu, which
right.
is Walmart's video-on-demand service available on smart TV sets and devices, or a separate interactive TV service. What do you think about Echo? And if they make the move to interactive television, how is that going to impact your company in terms of trying to put your own interactive services together?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of companies doing a lot of amazing things, trying a lot of amazing things in the space right now, right? And I feel very bullish about Echo. I think it's a very interesting product. How well it would do, you know, we will have to see, right? But I think again, there's a lot of value in creating these unique experiences that allow consumers to consume content differently, that allows producers to produce content differently, and really kind of push on the level of engagement, the level of interactivity, and just enrich the experience that the consumers can have, right? So overall, I think it's a great thing for the industry because it's moving us in the right direction, and it's really keeping everybody at the forefront of the technology and what's possible and the kinds of experiences that can be created, right? In terms of how it impacts us, we're looking to embrace this, you know, Echo and you know all the other services that we could work with, and again, it would be something that we look to participate in, right? Where we would look to figure out how we can kind of build within the Echo ecosystem, and if there's a way that we could perhaps help our content partners, you know, either be on that service or, you know, get distribution through that service, right? So from our perspective, we want to enable connections between content and consumers across as many devices, as many platforms, as many services that are available. In some cases, they happen to be linear. In some cases, they happen to be VOD. In some cases, you know, it could be some sort of a hybrid with a layer of, you know, interactivity on top of it, right? So the best part is that things are very, very fluid, and you know, we don't know how the dust is going to settle when it settles. But I think we see it as an opportunity to, again, be in as many places and be in front of, you know, as many users as possible.
We are speaking with the chief executive of Future Today, which is out to get new services available to you, either primarily or exclusively through smart TV sets and smart devices like Amazon Fire, Roku, NVIDIA Shield, et cetera, et cetera. Vikram Mathur is the person involved, the chief executive officer. He joins us live from San Francisco this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. A few more minutes with him. And we have a comment also as well before we wrap things up. So if you want to get on the horn with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Vikram, what channels can we expect from your company getting on smart TV sets and devices next year?
Sure. So there's, from a content perspective, there's really three big buckets that we operate in and think of. We have movies and television, which are, you know, free ad-supported movie channels where people can go and find very high-quality premium content from major studios as well as independents, often licensed on an exclusive basis or licensed, you know, on a first-run basis, and it's all made available for free in an ad-supported VOD environment. So that's kind of the first, you know, vertical, so to speak, that we operate in. The second vertical, which is, again, very, very big for us, is kids and family. And kids and family is where, obviously, the Lego channel sits. We work with a number of major other studios, production companies as well, and run their direct-to-consumer offerings. And that's really growing at a phenomenal pace. The third vertical for us is lifestyle, which includes categories like food, travel, health, fitness, beauty and fashion, home and garden. So we, from an adoption growth standpoint, we see a lot of interest in the first two categories, where you have you know, movies and television is a big, big driver of consumption. Obviously, you know, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime Video, they're all playing in that same space. And so it's been demonstrated and proven as to how big that category is. And so within that category, we will continue to work with studios as well as, you know, independent distributors to bring more premium, high-quality content onto the different platforms and make more and more content available. And that's a big focus for us. Kids and family, like I said, is a big, big category for us, and so we will continue to bring more family-friendly, safe content available to our users is part of that offering. And then within lifestyle, food, cooking, and travel are a couple of verticals where we're focusing right now, where we're seeing interest. And so that's kind of the third segment that we're looking at after movies and TV and kids and family.
If you want to know more about Future Today and what they are doing, including their new service, the LEGO Channel, that premiered earlier this month, here's where you go online, futureday.com. It's F-U-T-U-R-E today.com. Futureday.com and the LEGO Channel, now available on many smart TV sets and smart TV devices. So check it out. And Future Day, if you want to know more about the other services that Future Day has, including a service called HappyKids.tv, which is getting a lot of play all over the place, check out that website, futureday.com. I think you'll really, really enjoy it. Victor Massara, thank you so much for coming aboard. Good luck with you and your crew on whatever you're going to be putting together in 2020 and beyond. It's been a delight having you with us. Have a wonderful holiday season and a great start to the new year.
Likewise, Simon. Thank you so much for having me. And happy
you're very welcome. I have a hunch we are going to talk again soon, hopefully sooner in the new year than not. Take care. All the greatest.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Victor Massara, joining us live from San Francisco. And finally, a comment. A lot of retrospectives about 2019 going on right now all over the place, all over the map of the press. And one thing a lot of people are not talking about is the fact that there's three services in this era of mega programming that got underway this year. Yes, Apple TV. Yes, Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus. But a lot of people are forgetting the first one that came out earlier this year was BET Plus, with a library of over 1,000 titles, with a couple of original shows, one of them, The First Wives Club, the adaptation of the movie, loosely. It's already been renewed for a second season. They've got Tyler Perry shows coming up next year, and they just signed a deal to bring back The Family Business, the crime drama show that was on BET, back for a second season on BET Plus. Here's my question. Why isn't the press covering this service, especially in these retrospectives? Is it time that this service got its due? My answer is yes. So come on, press. If you're going to talk about mega programming services, put BET Plus in the mix. They were first before Apple TV Plus and before Disney Plus, and they're first before HBO Max and Peacock coming aboard next year. They deserve the attention, so give it to them. I want to thank all of our guests today for a wonderful dialogue about where TV is going this next decade and beyond. I hope you enjoyed it. We're going to have more, I'm sure, as the weeks go by and as this new decade unfolds very, very quickly. If you want to catch up on this episode or want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget to check out the podcast on iTunes, Apple TV, the Speaker Podcast app, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Don't forget, 90th edition coming away Monday, special time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, with Philippe Adams from New Sky Kids. He's the chief executive officer of a YouTube attraction, now a smart TV service. Plus, we'll have unscripted TV producer Ivan Iskey, who was on the show earlier this year, and also the creator executive producer of the new Netflix series soundtrack, Josh Stafford. Remember, we'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear your thoughts about where TV is and where it's going in this decade ahead. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. We respond within 24 hours because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not only those Blog Talk Radio, Blog Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate, BTR, is Candace Williams. And he chose Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Sonberg, executive content producer, the co-founder of Enterprise, Al Levy, and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we tell you, is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. If you're still looking for a great holiday gift, get a trial run, 1 month trial, free audiobooks for it, audibletrial.com/televised. But tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great pre-holiday weekend. If you're celebrating Hanukkah, by the way, happy Hanukkah to all of our Jewish listeners. And remember, we'll be back on Monday for the 3 episodes holiday week. Remember, first one is 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to this holiday week, and please make it safe and make it great. Let me just say that again. Whoops, got my tongue tied in a moment. Whatever you're up to this holiday weekend, make it safe and make it great. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.